I welcome you to another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired scripture. Today we begin in Exodus chapter number 12, as God is giving Moses instructions about how the whole calendar is going to be changed for the Israeli people because of the events that are happening right now. Now, I'm of the opinion that some of these things that God gives to Moses were given earlier on in the story, as in probably several weeks early, a couple of weeks early at the least, and that some of the details were intended to prepare the Israelis for the day that they would leave, the day of Passover and the first day of unleavened bread. So we'll keep that in the back of our mind, and we will have to talk a little bit about calendar systems as we move forward. So the way that the Israelis and the Canaanites and the Middle Eastern peoples had kept their calendars up to this point was by starting in the fall, or the beginning of the fall, when they started their agricultural procedures, meaning that's when they planted their fields with grain and began the process that would ultimately end up in the harvest happening in the spring and summer. So the way that they would do it is that they knew that there was the autumnal equinox, that is, the time in September, when you've got an equal amount of daylight and darkness there toward the third week of the month. They would then sight the first visible crescent of the new moon after that equinox, or in close proximity to that equinox, and that became the first month of their year. And then, of course, it would finish up with the 12th month being pretty much the wrap-up of all the harvest cycles, including the summer fruits. For the Israelis now, they are going to be told to adopt a secondary calendar, a calendar that will be connected to their new beginning with the Exodus. And it becomes a little bit difficult for those of us that are doing Bible study and doing chronology work, because the Israelis will use both of those calendars from here on out. And when I've put my calendar information in the front of my chronological companion to the Bible, I show both counting systems so that you can be aware that it is there. By the way, before I go any further, I believe that the calendar used in the book of Genesis in relationship to the flood was the calendar system that started in the fall. But now that we're in Exodus, we're going to see quite a bit of the use of this new counting procedure, which begins pretty much the same way, except just with the spring equinox. So in roughly the third week of March, that's where it's at right now for us, you've got a day where there's equal amounts of daylight and darkness. That's the equinox. And so the first visible crescent of the new moon that takes place after that event, or in close proximity to it, is the kickoff for this new calendar system. Now, I appreciate the fact that with our technology now, we can reconstruct pretty much the ancient calendar systems of the Israelis in most years. The anchor dates that I use in my chronology, which again you'll see a chart at the beginning of my chronological companion in the Bible, works backward from the year that Jerusalem was destroyed at God's command by the Babylonians. That's in 587. and you work backwards from that to the time of the establishment of the temple under Solomon, and then you can work backward from that to the Exodus. And so I put the date of the Exodus as 1456 BC. That would be the year. And the 14th day of that month, which is going to be the day of Passover, I believe took place in about 13/14 April of 1456. All right, now, chapter 12, verse 1. He who is, remember, for those of you who might be new, that's the way I am expressing the divine name. It is the literal meaning of the divine name. He who is said to Moshe or Moses and Aaron or Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. And so this year or this month is going to be called the month of Abib later. And it's a representation of the ripening barley grain. That's what's getting ready to be harvested in the middle of this month. Verse 3, tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. Now this is the beginning then of the procedure the Jewish people will use from here on out. On the 10th day of the first spring month, they will designate the lamb, and they will keep it with them for the next several days. Now, in this particular year, the Israelis selected the lamb the day before the 3 days of darkness happened, which would have been the 11th, 12th, and 13th. So the 10th day was a very pragmatic day for these guys because they had the lamb with them the entire time that the plague of darkness was causing trouble for the Egyptians. And then they would have it ready to butcher on the 14th day so that then they could leave on the 15th. Verse number 4 gets some pragmatic things. If the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest relatives shall take according to the number of persons. So based on how big of a lamb, because lambs are varying sizes. A lamb is anything up to about a year old is what I understand. So some lambs are big enough to feed a great big household, and others a medium, and others a small household. So the idea here is get as many people together from your family or maybe some close by neighbor families that you can eat the Passover lamb in one setting, or one sitting, I think would be the proper way, because that is going to be part of the procedure because they will leave immediately after the meal. Verse number 5, your lamb shall be without blemish, meaning it should not have any scarring on it. It should not have any type of moles or skin abrasions, anything that would show that it is not perfectly intact. And a male a year old. So there's your age bracket. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats. So it can be either sheep or goats. And you shall keep it until the 14th day of the month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. The word twilight is perhaps a little bit distracting for us English readers. The phrase is between the evenings. And we can see in the New Testament time that this was understood as meaning any time between when the 14th starts at sunset and when the 14th ends at the next sunset. That would be between the evenings. And this is why in the New Testament we see Jesus and his Galilean apostles eating their Passover meal on Thursday night after the sun went down. Yet the Jewish people in Jerusalem, the council members of the Sanhedrin, they were not planning on eating their Passover meal until after they butchered their lambs in the afternoon on the day that Jesus was crucified. And so you've got 2 days, actually, on our calendar system that the Passover meal could take place. Now, I think there's a reason why God made the phrasing in this fashion, because it allowed Jesus in the year of his sacrifice to both observe the Passover with his apostles, which he very much wanted to do, and then to fulfill the Passover the following day by being the lamb slain for the sins of the world. Now back to Exodus chapter 12. In this particular year, we know that what they did was butcher the lambs in the late afternoon of the actual 14th day, so that they would be eating the Passover meal after the sun went down and the 15th had begun. And that's when they're going to be leaving. All right, so verse number 7. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the 2 doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They're going to do this by using hyssop as a paintbrush or a splatter brush. They will slice the lamb's throat, catch the blood in a bowl, and then they will go to the house entry where they live, and they will dip the hyssop into the bowl of blood, and they'll slap some of it on the left side of the door, some of it on the right side of the door, and then another bit of it right at the top of the door. And then they will take the animal, skin it out, roast it, and then they'll be inside that blood-marked door during the night as they're eating the Passover meal. I never want to go past this without pointing out that there does seem to be some New Testament imagery put here, because we see the blood on the right hand, the left hand, and at the head of each doorway. And of course, we know that Jesus gave his blood from his right hand, his left hand, from his head where the crown of thorns were put, and then at his feet. And of course, the blood on the top of all these doorposts or these lintels is going to drip down into the center of the doorway. So in effect, we have the sign of the son's sacrifice, or if you will, the sign of the cross on each of these doorways. Verse number 8, they shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Now these are the only specific things listed for the Passover meal. No doubt there would have been other items such as spring vegetables, things like celery would be there, and then also preserved things from the previous harvest, things like perhaps chickpeas that would be roasted up and eaten, and or maybe even ground up into a paste. And there would be olives almost always, and then dried fruits would be part of the meal as well. When I do my Passover meal, my Last Supper meal, typically for the church, I always include the sorts of things that would have been included for such a meal. Now, the things that are mentioned here, though, are the core elements. The unleavened bread will be explained later because they won't have a chance to let it rise. The bitter herbs are not going to be like super, super bitter, you can't eat them. but rather those things that have that sharp taste to them, such as horseradish, which was something that was raised and enjoyed by people, or some of the lettuces that have that sharp, minty flavor to it. And so you'll see other herbs on this sort of list of what might have been on the table that night, which would have been enjoyed, but also as a reminder of the bitterness of their experience in Egypt, which they're about to leave behind. And then, of course, the flesh of the lamb. Verse 9 says, do not eat any of it raw, so it has to be well cooked, or boiled in water, which was a common way of preparing meat. Was you put it in a pot of boiling water and cooked it until it was done, made yourself a nice stew. But this is not to be the case with the lamb. It is to be roasted, its head with its legs and its inner parts, meaning you don't cut it up. You skin it out. You would probably take off the hooves, and you would, of course, gut it. The inner parts here may have been the items permissibly eaten of a sacrifice by the people sacrificing, which would include the liver minus the gallbladder, and I believe some of the other sweetmeats that might be in there. But I don't believe the kidneys were included in that, because in most of the sacrifices, the kidneys and the fat around the kidneys were part of the sacrificial portion given in thanks to God. All right, so this thing is to be roasted over an open fire hole. But then when they start eating it, verse 10, you shall not for some reason I'm trying to mix two translations in my head together. You shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn. So no leftovers. These guys were not supposed to pack up the leftover lamb and take it with them on the road, because this is a once for all time sacrifice, which, of course, is a New Testament principle. Jesus died once. He did not have to repeat that experience. So anything that they didn't eat when it came time to leave, they threw onto the open fire. And then in future, at the future commemoration of this event, they would do the same thing. When the closing prayer for the dinner was done, when the closing psalm was sung, all of the leftover meat was to be thrown onto the fire to burn up and not be eaten. Verse 11, in this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is he who is's Passover. So that'll be explained in a moment. They are supposed to eat it like they're ready to leave, meaning fully dressed, you still have your sandals on, your loins are girded for walking, meaning that your clothing is, the little tail on the backside of your tunic is pulled up between your legs and tucked into your belt. So you basically have shorts. You have culottes or whatever it's called, so that you can walk easily. That's how they're supposed to eat this. Now, normally when you ate a nice meal at night, you had already taken your sandals off, you had your feet washed, you loosened the belt and let everything just kind of hang loose, and you kicked back and just relaxed. But the Passover is intentionally supposed to be a reminder, we left Egypt fast. Verse 12, for I will pass through the land of Egypt that night. Now, typically we think about the angel of the Lord, the destroying angel of the Lord, being the one passes through and does the executions here. But God makes it clear, I'm the one that's doing this stuff. I'm the authority figure that will do this. I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am he who is. Now, the exception we already know is that any household marked by the blood of the Lamb will be passed over, meaning all the firstborn inside of that blood-marked building will be spared, and the animal firstborns associated with that family will also be spared. Now, we typically get it in our heads about little bitty kids, and it is true that little bitty children, firstborns, did die. Firstborn sons did die as young people. But this was about all firstborns of all ages. I am sitting here recording this day as a firstborn son nearing his 60th birthday. I would have been responsible for my own household if I had not done the blood sacrifice and marked the door and remained inside eating he who is his Passover appropriately, I would have been the one that died. And the majority of the firstborns who died certainly would have been above the age of young people, because that's the population graph. Okay? So keep that in the back of your head as well. Verse 13, the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. When I see the blood, I will pass over you. And that's where the word comes from. Paschal is the form in the Hebrew. And that's kind of where we get that sort of work, or sort of word and language. No plague or strike, because that's what a plague is about. It's a punishing blow, will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, a day that you remember, a day that you think about. And you shall keep it as a feast, a chag, which means something that comes up regularly on the calendar, year after year after year. You will keep it as a feast to he who is throughout your generations, as a statute forever, and you shall keep it as a feast or a regular observance. So the word feast here is not focused on the food, it's focused on the regular occurrence. It happens every year. Verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So remember, he's setting down the rules for future observances. And it's the principle based on this. When they used to bake bread, they would have some leavened starter batch from the last time that they made bread and allowed the unbaked material just kind of grow as the enzymes or the yeasty sort of stuff kind of spread throughout the whole lump. So they would keep a little bit from that uncooked batch aside, and then when they made their new batch, they'd put that in and work it through and set it aside and let it grow. On this occasion, they're going to move so fast that they shouldn't even bother putting in the starter batch, because what's going to happen is they're going to mix it up and immediately bake it so that there is no opportunity for the rising to take place. And they will keep doing that until they're on the other side of the Red Sea and the Egyptian chariot pursuit force is dead. And that's going to be the first week of their travel. And that's the reason for the week-long observance of unleavened bread. Now, the warning here is to future Israelis, if you don't follow through with this observance properly by not eating leavened bread during this 7-day period, then you will be cut off from the people of Israel. Now, that has several levels of seriousness. The first level is you will be excommunicated and shunned until you comply. That's the first level of being cut off. The second level is if you continue to refuse to comply, you will be exiled. You will be told to leave. And so that's the second serious level of being cut off. The third most serious level is if you refuse to be exiled and you return and refuse to leave, then the people of Israel will have no choice than to execute you. And that is the third, final, most serious level of being cut off. And so this is the warning already being put in place, is this is serious stuff. The Exodus is an important event, and the commemoration of it is also very important. It sets a standard and a pattern. On the first day, and this is where we'll wrap up today, on the first day you shall hold a holy assembly, and on the seventh day a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days, but what everyone needs to eat, that alone may be prepared for you. So basically, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that would be the 15th, and the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which would be the 21st, both of those were days off of normal work. They were holidays, holy days. And nobody was supposed to be doing anything on those days other than just getting their food together to eat as part of the observances of Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So we're out of time for the day. I hope that's all been helpful and instructive for you. I will see you tomorrow when we get back into God's Word.